Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. They should be like oil and water, unmixable. But people keep trying to blend the two into a workable solution that they think will bring about much-needed changes in this country. What am I talking about? Religion and politics, the two things we're not supposed to discuss at parties. Many believe that if they can just be combined, we as a nation could save ourselves from moral and financial doom and launch a new era of warmth and fuzziness. Our guest today says, think again. Let's talk with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about how these two elements of our existence need to be viewed and handled. Lincoln, help us out here, religion and politics.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on this. It's something that I work on all the time as editor of Liberty Magazine. But today I watched a program on C-SPAN, and I'm a C-SPAN junkie. So I watched this in my office, and it got my attention. I actually just turned it on almost to see the weather. That really was my intention. And C-SPAN came on, and then under the current program it said, coming up, discussion of religion and politics.
Ooh,
in,
that
in America
got your
today.
Attention.
And I thought, man, I'm going to watch that. Yeah. I've got to watch that. So I watched at least one person I know very well, Richard Land, ethicist with the Southern Baptists. He's written for Liberty Magazine before, and I've met him a couple of times. And with him on the program was Jim Wallace of Sojourners. Mm-hmm. I foolishly thought that they would have the same view. I found that they differed in some significant regards. But both of them are very involved with religion, want to project religion into society. And both of them are keen observers of the political scene. And it was interesting to hear these men interact and give their opinions on what we are now living through in yet another presidential election. Because religion is front and center, like it or not. Front and center, as it nearly always is in the United States, but I think more so than ever.
Well, let me ask you a question. You say religion is front and center. What do you mean by religion? What is front and center when it comes to religion?
Even for people of faith, it's sort of bizarre to hear. I think at least two candidates have said that they believe that God wants them to run. They've sort of got a divine nod from on high that it's God's will that they run, which puts you in a funny position.
It does.
If
it does.
You don't vote against that person, are you opposing God's will? You know, we don't laugh at God, but I mean, I think we're laughing here at an imaginary, an imagined connection to God.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure God plays the politics game, even though the Bible's very plain. God sets up princes and brings them down.
Yeah.
But I see that in sort of God's inscrutable ways that are not always plain to us. Plus, there's an element of cause and effect. You know, if a prince acts badly and opposes what amounts to the laws of the universe, you know, the consequence will probably come because of his own actions.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, it's very problematic here in a country that, for all the immorality and dishonesty and, you know, and just plain sleaziness that you read about in the newspapers, there's a bedrock identification with Christianity and religion, you know, because I should include Jews and Muslims and others. But it's a majority Protestant nation, plus a significant minority of Roman Catholics. So it's a Christian majority country. And that's fine. But it's really interesting to hear religion projected so obviously during a political campaign, particularly in the United States.
I'm assuming these people who are projecting this religion are thinking that this country wants to hear what they're saying. Have you found that to be true, Lincoln? Have you found that this country really wants religious leaders out there?
Well, we'll find that out next year.
But you and I as Christians, we hear this, we sort of have a jaundiced eye toward this. We take this with a grain of salt. Are we rare or are we pretty reflective of what the voters are like out there? What's your thoughts on that?
I'm not ready for it, and whether others are, it may be that a subset, in this case, since it's the Republican primary, a subset of the Republican primary base probably is. There are plenty of people, they're not a majority, thankfully, who think that the United States is a Christian republic. you know, they're historically wrong. And I was very gratified in this discussion this morning to hear both Jim Wallace, who's probably a little more leftist than Richard Land, but mm-hmm. to hear both of them say very definitively that the facts of history are clear. The United States was not founded upon a Christian constitutional or governmental base. It's just a country that always included a lot of Christians. Mm. So, you know, they're fine on that. But there are some people in our society that have this imagined mythical Christian nation that's sort of like the Crusader nation.
Yes.
And would like to write at large. And who knows, if they got their way, perhaps they would pass laws that create religious uniformity or attempt to create religious uniformity. Perhaps they would be rather intolerant of another religious viewpoint or no religious viewpoint. You know, that's the danger.
Yeah.
But, you know, the history is plain. And that's really what I was listening for on the C-SPAN discussion. And these guys were intellectually honest, because I've mentioned on this program before that there are pseudo-historians like David Barton, that's appearing on a lot of television and radio programs and in news media or newspapers and magazines. And he quotes history very selectively and gives you the idea that this was intended to be a Christian republic. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That surprises a lot of people, because I think if you polled a lot of the people on the streets today, you'd say, oh, yeah, this is a Christian nation. What you're saying is this is a nation where Christianity can exist unopposed. Is that more accurate of a way of describing this country?
Well, it was designed to be an environment that was very conducive to religious activity.
All religious activity.
Yes, and you got to be honest. At that time, they probably would have presumed Christian activity mostly.
Yeah.
They did say at the time of the signing of the Treaty of Tripoli with modern-day Libya, I mean, what amounts to modern-day Libya, mm-hmm. that America is by no means founded on Christianity, and that it was agreeable to Muslims, Christians, and so on. But I'm sure that that society, the default setting was Christianity, obviously.
Sure.
In fact, the default setting was more specific. It was Protestantism.
Protestant, exactly.
They were not positively inclined toward Catholicism. But maybe even there is proof of what they intended, because their natural inclination would have been, in fact, we know around that time frame of Englishmen, it was to restrict Catholic activity. But here, they chose not to. And as both these men mentioned again this morning when I watched this program, the Constitution is very plain that there is no religious test for public office. If they wanted to keep Catholics out, that would have been a qualified requirement.
Yes.
No, so it was to be open for the real reason. It was not religion. Religion was something that was in society, in the home, but not in the structure of government. Mm-hmm. Now, these two men said something that we need to keep in mind as we hear these politicians huff and puff about religion in the build-up to the presidential election. It's not right to say that religion is immaterial to the candidate and their execution of a public trust. It probably has everything to say about how that person will act publicly. Mm-hmm. But you should not disqualify them on the basis of what religious allegiance they've accepted. I think it was Richard Land said something about, you know, you can't separate morality from public life or personal morality.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they said a lot about, you know, the near impeachment of President Clinton. I think the whole impeachment process was skewed. That's just my personal opinion. But their point was correct. A public immorality like that, or an exposure of a big moment of immorality, you can't just easily say, well, that's a personal, private thing. It has nothing to do with how they'll carry on as a leader of a country. They made the point, and they were actually talking about Newt Gingrich at the time, that somebody that will lie to their wife, that will mislead and deceive those close to them, just as likely, in fact, almost certainly, will do the same to the larger community.
Yeah.
You know, it's unlikely that the people that they trust and they love, that they will act dishonorably with them, but that they'll keep the public trust perfectly. No, they're one and the same. But I do think the country did itself a disservice to try to make, as they say, a federal case out of a private dishonesty. I think left to its own devices, as it has in reality, that has brought its own public punishment.
Yes.
I was actually present at a public event not too long after that impeachment, where President Clinton gave a public speech to a bunch of high school students, and somebody asked him about this. And he was most embarrassed, put his head in his hands, and it was sort of like a schoolboy response to being caught. Mm-hmm. He did not look brazen about it to me. And said that he was ashamed, that he was sorry, and all the rest. I mean, something we didn't hear on a larger public arena, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Morality, from my perspective, should flow from dedicated personal Christian living. And a wonderful thing to have people informed by their religious life and their religious morality, to have those people entrusted with public office. But just because somebody feels moved in their private life that God wants them to do this, just because a religious faction is behind them, just because they state a religious agenda, in fact, that itself is problematic, that, you know, they will morally clean up the country, or they will mandate some new policy against abortion or something, you know, supposedly their religion demands this. Mm-hmm. That's not a reason to vote for someone. Mm-hmm. And I like that Jim Wallace, on their discussion, said as much in the way he said he didn't like that, say, some Republicans or some people were voting for a Republican just because they had a certain position on abortion. Mm-hmm. And he says, I find the immorality of what Wall Street has done to this country. The huge betrayal of trust.
Absolutely.
He says, you know, that's just as offensive. So someone's stance on that is just as important in its own way as what they might hold on the abortion issue.
We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about religion and politics today. We are looking at the field of politicians around us and wondering if we should be broadening our view. That's what I hear you saying, Lincoln. We should be not just focusing on one aspect of their character or of their stance and their politics. We should look at what? What should be the determining factor that we use in determining whether we're going to give someone a vote or not?
Well, I mean, I hesitate to even say that because people should make it up for themselves. But when we're talking about religion,
yes,
I think it's how this person asking for public trust projects and integrates a religious moral viewpoint into public policy, rather than talking about public policy by interjecting what amounts to church viewpoints. Mm-hmm. They got it the wrong way around.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Richard Land said something very good that really backed up what I commented about from Jim Wallace, but he said you can't separate economic from moral issues. That's an interesting.
Interesting, it is, yes.
And what I read into that, and I think it's a recent conversion, if not from him, then many religious leaders in this country, they really have recognized that there is a, I was going to say social gospel, but that's misleading. But I'll give it in the negative. About 8 years ago, many of the ascendant religious right had a viewpoint that you didn't really need to do much for the poor because it was not the government's business to do it, that it was sort of aiding and abetting poverty. And people that were poor in this most blessed of all countries were really poor because of a moral failing.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm somewhat extrapolating, but I've read things to that effect, and I know that informed them. So now for him to say, because they were talking directly about abortion and so on, to say that economic issues can have an underlying morality, that's very significant.
It is.
And I think it was Jim Wallace pointed out something that's always worried me. We're concerned about reinstating a sort of a national goodness and a national integrity, and maybe helping some people with the resources of the country, not just with housing, but helping the poor in ways that lift them out of poverty, not just handouts. No one thinks that's great.
Right.
But, you know, you can emphasize that. But if at the same time you're spending insanely large amounts of money on a military, there's a moral imbalance there.
You know, this is even biblical because isn't there a text that says the love of money is the root of all evil? So there's a connection there between.
Well, they mentioned
money.
That.
Yeah.
Mammon, I think, was the word
mammon,
used.
Mammon, yes.
Which covers a little bit more than money. Mammon is really the currency and the ways of the world, all that leads to destruction. Mm-hmm. You know, wine, women, and song, maybe.
Yes.
It's another way to talk about it. Now, I was very encouraged, actually, to hear these two religious leaders talking about this. I'm discouraged as I hear the discourse that goes on around the election posturing. Mm-hmm. But I think these two men, and they're not representative of all public religious figures, but they do have they're not synonymous. They're really two threads, significant threads of religious presentation at the moment. To find them both united on the historical separation of church and state, an accurate remembrance of how the U.S. came to be, and then when they got into issues, it wasn't just a discussion of abortion. That's really what I liked.
Yeah.
That they were very plain on separation of church and state, that we shouldn't be prejudiced against any religious viewpoint. And they even said it should be possible for an atheist even to become president. Mm-hmm. That in itself should not disqualify them. I mean, they didn't say they would vote for an atheist.
Right.
But, you know, there are other factors. That's just one element. But what type of human being is presenting for that office? That would be important.
You bring up a very important point for me as a voter, someone looking at the field of politics and the people who are running for office, that we look at their lives, how they live, if what they say they do, if they are honest with their staff and with the people in which they come in contact, if they're honest with their wives and their children, then we can sort of figure that they'll carry this honesty into their office as they become our representatives in this country. That's kind of important. It's not a test of what they believe. It's a test of how they live. Am I on the right track here?
Absolutely. And I wrote down one of the statements. They said, you can't separate public life and moral values.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm repeating this, actually not comfortable about it, because they went on and on about Newt Gingrich, and the net effect is that they really demolished him. But he's a very fertile playground for opinions on how a person should act. You know, I do remember Newt Gingrich back in the Clinton era. He was almost a caricature of a politician.
He was, yes.
And was quite willing to pull the secular temple down to get his way. But, you know, his dalliance, his separation from his last wife, and the dalliance with the present one, although she's, you know, they seem very circumspect couple now. He's converted to Catholicism since. Mm-hmm. And as they acknowledged on this program, more than just about any public official, he's presented a very public mea culpa and a conversion on top of it. Mm-hmm. And as they said, Christians should believe in forgiveness.
Sure.
But Richard Land made a big point that's worth thinking about. Forgiveness is one thing. We hand that out freely, as Christ told us. But it's a big jump from that, as they said in discussion, to not only forgive, but to entrust the leadership of a country for 4 years on the hope and the belief that maybe they're a different person. So, as we all know, actions have consequences, and the Bible's very plain on that. You can't undo the past. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to maintain circumspect godly lives. You know, it's not true, as some theologians were maintaining. I remember studying this in school, that they used to call it the fortunate fall, that by falling into sin and understanding the depths of evil, now Adam and Eve and their descendants are really better people for having known the bad.
Oh, my.
better never to have done these things.
Right, absolutely.
But, you know, as the Bible says, if we do fall, we have an advocate with Jesus the Son, and will help us with God the Father. Mm. No, it's an interesting dynamic that when we think about religion in public life, and it would be better if we weren't so commonly reminded of this by these pious statements.
Yeah.
At the risk of repeating myself, but I doubt most of, well, I am repeating myself, but I doubt most of our listeners listen to all the programs, but I'm just, every time the election comes up, I'm reminded of a cartoon that just tickled my fancy big time with Opus the Penguin. Bloom County, I think it was called, but it had Opus the Penguin, and they had him running for public office, and of course, as a penguin, he has his own viewpoint on walruses and, you know, his deities.
Yes.
And he got up and he said, he says, I believe in religion. And he says, what's more? He's on the stage. He says, I believe it 20% more than my nearest opponent. And which is pretty much what they're trying to do now.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, people clap in the cartoon thing. You hear the applause. And then someone yells out a question. Do you believe in walrus angels? A specific question about his religious faith.
Yes.
And he says, oh, yes, of course I do. And next thing you see him literally being kicked off the stage. And he says, public religiosity is such a dangerous thing.
Oh, my, that sort of says it all.
And yes, and that is the case. I mean, it's fine to make a generic statement that, well, it's not quite generic, but, you know, God wants you to be there. Mm-hmm. But if you carry the favor of a particular religious group, they are often forced to make specific affirmations to that group that will alienate them to another. So there's a double-edged sword on this. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with a civil society, I don't think that's good, quite apart from the separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm. Lincoln, I've got a question for you. The church member sitting in the pew, should that church member require that the leadership of that individual church or that denomination provide some guidance as they look to the voting in the months and years to come? Should there be a pulpit from which leadership provides the information that the church member needs in making decisions on who to vote for and how to vote?
Well, it's been done.
Yes.
And we had an article some time ago about the Black Robe Regiment, they were called, of of the ministers thundering from the pulpit in the pre-revolutionary days leading up to the American Revolution. And the British even said that they were the Black Robe Regiment that had stirred up the people to go to war with the crown. Perhaps you might say that that was good because America became independent. But it's always bad, I think, when religious leaders meddle that way. Hmm. Not too many years ago, the religious right, and I think they still do it, would send out voter recommendations.
Yes.
They would say which way different people had voted in Congress or the Senate, and then they would tell their members whether to vote that person up or down or who to vote for. That's not good because they had thoroughly politicized their spiritual role and probably made bad judgments along the line.
Yeah.
Ellen White, a Seventh Adventist leader, made a very telling point to Adventists when they were asking about voting. She says, do it prayerfully, think it through, and she says, realize that if you vote for someone and they betray that trust, they do the wrong things, you have a certain culpability.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a heavy responsibility, but we shouldn't think of it as the same as electing someone to be head of the church. So
yeah,
it's a secular thing, and there are many equations, some of which don't bear on church leadership at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are even mechanical. Will that person represent you adequately? People forget this. Mm-hmm. Someone may have the greatest ideas, but if they're not a good advocate, not an effective advocate, you may not want to vote for that person. Someone else might be able to twist the arms of other legislators better and represent the area better. So what business has the church in that?
I'm going to ask you for a personal opinion here, and I usually don't do this, but I'm going to ask you for a personal opinion here. President Obama, has he carried his promises when it comes to religious freedom and his words, have they become action in the last years that he's been president, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, you're setting me up unfairly. We don't want this program to be a political action program.
But I'm trying to find a template here that we can use.
We need to recognize all human beings are fallible and even with good intentions. I don't think there's a politician alive or a system that exists that they could be elected to or appointed to that they could absolutely do what they wanted or they promised. I'm not as down on President Obama as some of his political enemies. I think he's done some things good, some things not so good. On religious freedom, there's no overt challenges to religious liberty in the United States, and he's spoken very well and highly of the unique freedoms that we have. We criticized him once in Liberty magazine for seeming to slip into a terminological change from freedom of religion to freedom of worship, which is really much narrower form of that. Just recently, the military appropriations bill that he said he would veto and then did not
contained a provision in the War on Terror that citizens could be detained indefinitely by the military. That's problematic, and it's not a religious freedom thing, but it could easily be part of a restriction on religious viewpoints, because the War on Terror is everything to do with religion, and you know, people giving to different charities, and that might find that they have a black mark against them on some checklist somewhere. Mm. So, you know, I could wish President Obama had done differently in some areas, and other areas I think fine. The election will see whether he sustains, but he hasn't done hugely egregious things against separation of church and state and against expressions of religion. Okay. Now, mentioning Obama, though, and of course he's a very historically significant figure as the first African-American, or in his case, very African-American,
yes,
since his origins directly are from Africa.
Yeah.
President, you know, this is something America can be proud of. But I was most impressed that Richard Land and Jim Wallace both tackled, when they were asked about American exceptionalism, which Land agrees on, and I have deep issues with him on that, mm-hmm, but they both agreed that the United States is not a perfect place. It set a nicely intentioned constitution in place, but at the time of its passage, this was a very divided and prejudicial place. The women couldn't vote, mm-hmm, and they even brought that up. And, of course, African-American slaves were chattel.
Yes.
They were not even accepted as voting or really as full value of human beings for voter registration or for representation. What was it? Two-thirds of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't realize. It's in the Constitution. And I like what they said, that racism, because they needed to be careful, because given that this was a largely Protestant Christian constituency when this nation was formed, then you could say, well, was racism, were those terms of the Constitution, were they somehow derivative of Christianity? And they said no. They said it's a reminder of our fallen nature, and it seems that human beings, even Christian human beings, readily fall back on these reminders of the corruption of our nature, prejudice and against women, against racial groups, slaves. And I like that. They said that this is a result of the fallen nature, and that we need to, and they quoted Martin Luther King. They said he shamed us into following our original documents, mm-hmm, the inherent principles of the original documents. That's a good recognition, because I know the Southern Baptists, other than the black constituency, were reticent to pick up on that even during the civil rights era.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion today on religion and politics. And Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, thank you very much for sharing with us today.
I hope it's given someone food for thought.
It certainly has me. I can tell you that right now. And listener, we hope that is true with you also. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.